Welcome to the Deep Dive. If you've been following the world of digital assets for, more than 5 minutes, you've heard the term tokenization.
It's everywhere.
It is. And the idea is that we can fractionalize these massive illiquid assets, like a skyscraper, into easily tradable digital tokens. It promises this huge democratization of real estate access.
And that's a compelling technological vision for sure.
Yeah.
But today we are deliberately pushing past the blockchain hype, past the speed of settlement.
Okay.
Our mission is to really focus on the essential legal architecture underneath it all. For you, the investor, the technology is just the delivery mechanism. The law is what determines your actual ownership right.
And the protections you have.
Exactly. The protections you possess, and ultimately the long-term security of your capital.
That's the core tension, isn't it? Tokenized property, it sits at this really complex, sometimes contradictory intersection. You have old world real estate law, new digital asset frameworks, and then global securities regulation all meeting in one place.
Right. So if the token is the shiny new key, we need to know what legal vault it actually opens.
So today we'll define what a token legally represents. We'll analyze the different ownership structures platforms use.
We'll review the necessary compliance friction, and then we'll tackle the minefield that is cross-border legal enforcement.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the basics. What exactly is the legal side of tokenized property?
Well, it refers to the whole body of rules, rights, and obligations governing how that tokenized real estate is created, how it's sold, and how it's managed across its entire life.
And here's the point that I think trips a lot of people up.
Yes, this is the most critical distinction to grasp immediately. Tokenization is not an escape hatch from the legal system. It does not operate outside the law.
It's not the Wild West.
Not at all. It must comply, often exhaustively, with existing legal frameworks in every relevant jurisdiction. And that means where the asset sits, where the platform operates, and crucially, where the investors reside.
And this is key. The token itself is not the property.
Which feels a little counterintuitive, right? If I buy 100 tokens representing a piece of property, I don't own 100 tokens worth of land.
You absolutely do not. No. The physical property, the building, it still has to be held and governed under traditional real estate law.
So what is the token then?
The token legally represents a defined interest in that real-world asset. That interest might be equity or a beneficial ownership right or maybe just a contractual claim. The legal documentation around the token is what gives you your rights.
So the tech promises to get rid of paperwork, but the legal reality is that it actually requires more precise and detailed legal documentation than ever before.
That's right. This documentation has to define everything. How ownership is established, how rental income or capital gains are distributed, and maybe most importantly, how disputes are resolved.
That's the foundation.
That is the foundation of legal enforceability. It ensures your digital investment corresponds to rights that can be upheld in a court of law, not just, relying on the platform's good faith or its terms of service page.
Exactly. And this rigor is critical because these structures involve so many moving parts. You've got platforms, custodians, asset managers, and you.
That brings up the question of accountability.
Yeah.
If the boiler breaks in the tokenized apartment building, who is legally on the hook for fixing it and paying for it?
Precisely. The legal documentation must define accountability for everything. Who manages the asset? Who makes the big decisions about maintenance or even selling? And how are conflicts of interest, and they will come up, how are they addressed?
Right.
Without those clear lines of legal responsibility, even a super secure blockchain token exposes you, the investor, to just unacceptable levels of uncertainty and operational risk.
Okay, so here's where we move from the what to the how, from definition to structure. Unlike traditional ownership, where you just hold the title deed, tokenized property uses these specialized legal constructs. How does the typical model, the SPV, actually work?
The standard model uses a special purpose vehicle, or an SPV. It's essentially a corporate shell company or a legal trust. Think of the SPV as a secure legal container,
A box.
a box. The physical property is placed inside that container.
And the real advantage of the SPV is that it isolates the asset, right?
Exactly. The SPV legally owns the building. Now, when you buy tokens, you are buying a defined interest in that entity, in the SPV, not the building itself.
And that separation is vital.
It is. It means the asset is insulated from the financial risks or, say, the bankruptcy of the platform that listed the tokens. If the platform goes under, the SPV still legally owns the property on behalf of its token holders.
That distinction is just massive for risk mitigation. Now, The key takeaway for you, the investor, is that not all SPVs are created equal. The legal structure dictates the rights you actually get.
It is not a one-size-fits-all token.
Right. So the source material outlines four common models. We need to walk through these because they define your level of participation and your protection.
Let's start with the one that's closest to what people might already know, the SPV equity model.
Okay, so in this structure, you, the investor, you own shares, an equity interest directly in the SPV.
That's right. And since the SPV is a corporation, your rights are based on standard company law. You get income participation, and you benefit from any capital appreciation of the asset.
So you might even have some governance rights, like voting.
Potentially, yes. As a shareholder, you may have voting rights proportional to your stake. Now, in practice, those are often delegated to the asset manager, but the right is there. It feels the most like owning stock in a real estate company.
Okay. Now let's contrast that with model number two, beneficial ownership. How is that different?
Well, this model is structured through trust or contract law, not corporate law. The SPV holds the legal title, but you, the investor, you hold a beneficial interest.
So I get the economic benefits, the rent checks.
You get the economic benefits, the rental income, but you usually have much more limited or even no control over the asset's management.
So I'm just along for the ride, hoping the asset manager makes good calls. I get the cash flow that I don't get a vote.
That is generally the trade-off, yes. It simplifies the legal side of things, and it's often used for passive income. But it requires a lot more trust in the fiduciary duty of the trustee. The enforcement mechanism is the trust document, not corporate law.
Got it. Okay, let's look at the third structure. This one sounds maybe the simplest, but also potentially the riskiest. Contractual participation.
It is. This is based entirely on a simple contract law agreement between you and the SPV or the platform. You hold a contractual claim, and your rights are typically limited exclusively to income distribution.
It's a revenue share agreement.
That's all it is, a mechanism for revenue sharing.
So if the platform goes belly up, how hard is it to enforce that purely contractual claim against the actual property?
And that's the central vulnerability. Because your claim is based on one specific contract, enforcing it in bankruptcy proceedings against other creditors who might have secured claims on the physical asset can be much, much harder than if you held direct equity. Your right to cash flow is strong, but your protection against asset default is generally weaker.
Okay. And finally, the fourth model, the fund-based structure.
This is where the SPV structure is layered within a larger regulated investment fund. So you hold tokenized units in that overall fund vehicle. Your rights entitle you to proportional returns based on standard fund regulation.
So this is for platforms that are really seeking maximum regulatory oversight.
Exactly. It follows established rules for collective investment schemes.
Yeah.
It's built for compliance from the ground up.
So the due diligence for any potential tokenized investment really just hinges on asking, which of these four models defines my relationship to the property? And does that model give me the enforcement rights that I need?
Precisely. You have to confirm which rights, income, appreciation, governance are clearly defined and legally enforceable. That deep dive is non-negotiable.
All right, let's address the elephant in the room. When new, exciting tech comes along, the common idea is that it's a way to bypass old, clunky rules. Is tokenization just a loophole to avoid traditional securities regulation?
That's a common misconception that really needs to be corrected firmly. The reality is the vast majority of well-structured tokenized property investments fall squarely under existing securities laws, real estate regulations, or collective investment frameworks.
So regulators globally, they're looking at this.
Oh, absolutely. Regulators from the SEC to the FCA have largely concluded that if it looks like a security, if you expect profits from the efforts of others, it's a security, digital asset or not.
So the efficiency of the blockchain is immediately met with the friction of compliance. What are some of the specific regulatory hurdles that legitimate platforms have to clear?
It's extensive. They need robust investor disclosures, explaining the risks, the structure, the fees, all of it. There are licensing obligations. And crucially, given how easily digital assets move, stringent know-your-customer procedures, KYC.
And anti-money laundering checks. AML.
Mandatory.
Yeah.
And suitability assessments as well, right? Making sure the product is actually appropriate for the investor's risk profile.
Especially with retail investors.
Especially then. And this whole regulatory stack, it's why compliance isn't a drawback. It is the single greatest factor strengthening the legitimacy of the entire thing. It provides the investor protection and the legal recourse necessary to ensure the investment stays within recognized, tested legal boundaries.
Okay, now let's make things way more complicated. Tokenization is inherently global. What happens when the property is in Berlin, the platform is structured in Singapore, and the investor is in New York?
Well, you've just described a massive legal headache.
Yeah.
It creates a fundamental conflict of laws.
Yeah.
The real estate itself is governed by the law of the land where it sits, German law for a Berlin apartment.
Right.
But the investor in New York is simultaneously governed by U.S. securities and tax regulations. So you have property laws, tax laws, and investor protection laws from different countries all colliding in a single transaction.
So how do legal teams even structure these deals? Do they just pick the jurisdiction with the fewest rules?
They absolutely cannot, no. They rely on incredibly complex, carefully designed legal entities and contracts built specifically to ensure compliance in multiple jurisdictions at once.
Wow.
And this often means strategically limiting who can invest, maybe blocking investors from regions where regulations are just too complex or unclear. And they have to tailor disclosures to meet every local requirement, not just for their home base.
Let's dive deeper into those cross-border issues. The first big one is dispute resolution.
Right. When something goes wrong, a dispute over fees, a disagreement on selling the asset, everyone needs to know where they go to settle it. The legal agreements have to have clear choice of law and jurisdiction clauses.
You can't have an investor in London trying to sue a German SPV in a Singapore court.
You can't. It'd be chaos. And that's why you often see international arbitration specified, often in neutral territories like London or Geneva. It reduces the uncertainty. But that has to be defined up front.
Okay, the second, and this is often the most painful one for investors, is taxation and reporting.
This is where tokenization can lose some of that efficiency advantage. You, the investor, may be subject to tax requirements in both the asset's country, say, German income tax on rental revenue, and your own country of residence.
Like U.S. capital gains tax when you sell the token.
Exactly. The legal structure has to define precisely how that income is treated, whether the platform withholds tax, and which reporting obligations fall on you, the investor.
And if that isn't crystal clear, you could face some really nasty surprises at tax time.
Huge liability and compliance risk. And finally, there's enforcement. Investor protection mechanisms are wildly different across jurisdictions. What protects an investor in Canada might not apply if the asset is held somewhere else. The choice of governing law is absolutely vital for making sure your rights are actually enforceable.
So let's wrap this all up with a real-world example. We mentioned Gamma Assets from the sources. How do they navigate this legal minefield?
Gamma Assets is a really great application of these best practices. Their whole strategy is prioritizing legal integrity over, you know, technological flash.
So they're building on a solid foundation first.
A solid legal foundation. They structure their investments using legally recognized entities, sticking to the clear SPV ownership frameworks we talked about. And they focus on jurisdictions with stable, well-defined legal systems.
And the key difference seems to be in how they document the rights.
Absolutely. They don't just rely on some informal platform terms of service. They document investor rights through formal, robust legal agreements, shareholder agreements, trust deeds that are separate from the token itself.
Okay.
Their focus is long-term regulatory alignment. Transparent disclosures, full KYCML, and ensuring their offerings meet the highest applicable legal standards. They treat the token like what it is, a representation of a highly regulated security, not just a digital commodity.
Which brings us back to our main insight. The legal side is the actual foundation for this whole industry. Tokenization offers access and liquidity, but it's the legal integrity that ensures your ownership rights, your compliance, and your risk management.
Without that legal rigor, the technology is meaningless.
Just a promise.
And that leads to a final, maybe provocative thought for you to consider. We spent this whole deep dive establishing that the enforceability of your rights depends entirely on the strength and the clarity of the underlying legal documentation and the jurisdiction governing that SPV.
Right.
So, since we now know that a well-structured tokenized property can offer the same level of legal enforceability as a traditional investment, perhaps the real task isn't comparing tokens to traditional real estate at all. Maybe the necessary step is to critically evaluate the quality, the stability, and the specific jurisdiction of the legal entity behind the tokenized offering. That is where your true value assessment and your due diligence must begin.